Tonight's shir is dedicated to L'mnishmas Bezalel ben Yitzchak. We begin learning now, this week, we get to learn Sefer Dvarim, the last of the Chamishi Chamshei Torah, the end of the Chumash, and this takes us to the beginning of Parshas Dvarim. Parshas Dvarim is often known as Mishneh Torah, that's the term the Gemara gives it in Megillah, which literally translates to mean that it's a repetition. Much of Sefer Dvarim is going to repeat and to reteach what we already learned in some of the earlier parashiyos. Nonetheless, there are quite a few chedushim that are in Sefer Dvarim that are important, but as we'll see, that Sefer Dvarim is a unique Sefer, its style is different, its writing is different, its purpose is different than the other four of the books that we've already learned throughout the year. We're going to learn that Sefer Dvarim is one of the greatest Musar Svarim ever written. Believe it or not, people think the Musar movement started much later, but nowhere than Moshe Rabbeinu, no earlier than Moshe Rabbeinu did the Musar movement start with this Sefer, where Moshe Rabbeinu rebukes Klal Yisrael on the way he does it, and how he does it is so important, it's so relevant, and therefore it's really the first of the Musar Svarim that Klal Yisrael has. But as we're going to learn through the Sefer, there's an art and a talent to give Musar. Everyone likes to give Musar. It's a lot of fun to give Musar. But there's a very, very, very sophisticated and difficult art in how to give Musar and the proper way to give Musar, and that Moshe Rabbeinu will teach us as well in this week's parasha. And it's interesting, if you look in the Sefer Menachas Asher, Basha Weiss, in his introduction to this Sefer, he points out, and he quotes from many other earlier commentaries, the Netziv and others, that Sefer Devarim is a Sefer that's a classic. It's applicable not only for the generation that Moshe Rabbeinu was talking to, but he was really talking to all of us. Although Moshe Rabbeinu's rebuke was to a specific group of people, it was to the group of Jews who lived at that time in history, 40 years after the leaving of Mitzrayim, but it's really talking to all of us, and the lessons of what Moshe Rabbeinu is giving over is relevant in all our lives as well. It's really what he calls from the Netziv in the Sefer Amik Dover, it's the guiding light for Musar. If you want to know where to turn to when you're looking for Musa, where do you turn to when you're looking for some form of guidance and direction in whatever point of life you're in, whatever time in history you're in, and you want to know, where do I go? What's the decision? Says the Netziv in the Sefer Amik Dover, study Sefer Dvarim. And they quote from the Chazim Lublin that there were people who would learn Sefer Dvarim all the time. It's like a Musa Sefer, like you learn Musa Sefer all the time. It's part of the standard Svarim of learning to how to improve and become a better person. But it explains to Rabbi Asher Weiss something fascinating about Moshe Rabbeinu's art of rebuke. They should name a book, The Art of the Rebuke. That would be something special. How to give Musar. Says Rabbi Asher Weiss, what was unique about Moshe Rabbeinu's Musar was on one hand he was rebuking them, but on the same end he was trying to be Malamed Chus for them. So on one hand he was being the Katreg and the Sanegra at the same time. And he says, what is the greatest example? A little bit into the parasha, we're going to learn that there's a word that says V'dizahav. So the Gemara says, Rashi quotes a Medrash, that he was giving them Musar, that because they had so much money, they sinned in the ego. So he was giving them Musar. Listen guys, you think you want so much money, 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 money. You realize money's not so great because you had so much money when you left Mitzrayim and you sinned. The Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu said the same drasha to Kadosh Baruch Hu. He says to Hashem, why did you give them so much money? What were you thinking? Too much money, they sinned. Says Rabbi Shmuel, isn't that amazing? Moshe Rabbeinu on one end is blaming us, and at the same time, he's coming to defend us. That's because the rebuke of Moshe Rabbeinu was coming from love. If you don't care about the person, so you just yell and scream at them because you don't really care. The rebuke of Moshe Rabbeinu was coming from such a place of love that he was trying to rebuke them because he wants to improve them. On the same angle, he was trying to save them because they have a fair time. They have an argument. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu was saying that although you sinned with this, but you somewhat have an excuse. Very often, let's say, as parents, we have to deal with our children. And sometimes we have to rebuke them, but we sometimes understand why they made the mistake, you know? We let them play with our iPhone, and then they got themselves into trouble. Well, we shouldn't have let them use that in the first place. So it's kind of somewhat our mistake as well. So Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to play both sides. He's trying to be the Katreg and the Sanegar on both ends. And the Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva, unbelievable, the Rambam writes that we have an obligation to appoint leaders that will give us Musar. We have to live in a society where we will get Musar. And we have to arrange for people to give us Musar. But one of the rules, says the Rambam, is they have to be someone who's beloved by the people. Can't just get a guy who everyone hates, who just spends his whole time yelling at us. It has to be someone who's ahuv to the community. When someone is beloved by the community, he can give mussar. Why? Because then it's coming from the right place. If it's coming just because I don't like you and I just want to put you down, so then I have no right to give mussar. A person can only give mussar if he cares enough about you. Therefore, the Rambam says one of the rules to give mussar is that it has to be that you are beloved by the people. People love you. The people loved Moshe Rabbeinu. Despite the fact that they had a lot of run-ins with Moshe Rabbeinu, they loved Moshe Rabbeinu, and they knew Moshe Rabbeinu loved them. That's where Moshe Rabbeinu was able to rebuke them. In order to give good rebuke, you have to feel that the people love you. That's why as a parent or as an educator, the mussar stands to go much further when the people feel that it's coming from love, not out of anger, not out of resentment, not out of frustration. When it's coming out of a place of love, they feel it much more. It's received much better in a way that people take and listen to the mussar because they know it's coming out of love. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu is teaching us in this week's parasha. It's not enough to give mussar. Everyone can give mussar. It's so easy to give mussar, right? Everyone loves to give mussar. You walk into any shul, any Jewish organization, there's a list of people that will tell you what you're doing wrong. But how many of those people are doing it out of love? Very few. Very few people are doing it because this is their only platform to say what they want, because at home they can't say what they want, and at work they can't say what they want, so they come to shul and they tell the gabbai he's wrong, and the rabbi's wrong, and everyone's wrong. They come to the community and everyone's bad, because they're not happy people. But when a person's rebuking him out of, because I care, I want things to get better, because I see you're in a bad path, I see things are not going the proper direction, I want to help, then the rebuke is received much better. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu is teaching us. I think if you had to title this week's parasha, perhaps the whole sefer would be how to give mussar. Learning from Moshe Rabbeinu how to give mussar, the level and the proper idea on giving mussar. It's very difficult when a parent rebukes a child. Moshe Rabbeinu looked at us as his children. He loved us. He was with us from the beginning. He was mamash our parent. It's very hard to rebuke a child, but if you don't rebuke the child will grow up to be a very, very a big burden on society. If you ever see parents that don't raise their children, it's not healthy. The kids grow up to be monsters, literally, because they have absolutely no guidance, they have no adracha, they have no borders, and they have no lines of what's wrong and what's right. They have no idea. Parents that have to, it's not fun to punish your child. Just the other day, my son got a watch. He just turned 6, he had a big birthday, so he got some watch that has games on it. And he used it one day, and the next day he was totally out of control. So we had to punish him. He had to lose his watch for a day. And, he's yelling and he's screaming and he's upset. But you got to do it because that's the only way the kids learn. If you let them do whatever they want, they turn into members of society that no one wants to be around. So we had to punish him. We had to take away his watch. And I don't know if he got it back yet. I have to find out if he ever got the watch back yet. But okay, it was painful and it wasn't, it wasn't nice. You don't want to do it, especially after you just got his birthday present. Then you got to do that. Because if not, if you give them no control, there's no boundaries, then they're not going to grow up to be healthy members of society. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu is teaching us a very, very important message about this idea. I was just listening on my way in this evening. I was listening to Reb Ephraim Goldberg. So he quoted, there's two Gemaras in Shas that we know of. Why was the Beis Hamikdash destroyed? So one famous Gemara everyone knows, because of Sinas Chinam. Very famous Gemara. There's another Gemara. The reason why the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed is because we didn't rebuke each other. So he asks, that's obviously contradictory. Right, we always assume is that if I don't like you, all day long I'm rebuking you. And if I do like you, right, then I'm not going to rebuke you. So he pointed out, he says, of course not. The reason why we rebuke each other is because we actually care about each other. If I don't care about you, so I'm not going to bother rebuking you, because I just don't care. You're good at what you're doing, you're not good at what you're doing, I just don't care. If I see you're acting incorrectly, I don't care about your life, so I'm not going to bother to rebuke you. So he says, that's sinas chinam. I don't care enough about you. If I really care about you and I worry about you, of course I'm going to rebuke you. How can I let you walk into a moving car, walking into traffic? I can't let that to happen. So very often in life, we confuse the two emotions. We say, I can't give you mussar because I care about you. It's exactly the opposite. It's because I care about you and I want you to grow up to be healthy and I want you to be a normal person in society. That's why we rebuke. The Ramban in his introduction to Sefer Devarim is amazing. We could probably spend the entire shiur learning the Ramban slowly, word for word, line for line, but we're not going to. But it's an unbelievable Ramban in his introduction. He starts off, we mentioned every time you learn one of the new Svarim, you got to always go through the Ramban's introduction. He always has great, great information. And this one is even more so. He writes like this. What is the Sefer says the Ramban? This is called Mishneh Torah. That's what the Gemara calls it. Why? And he says, Yivor boy Moshe Rabbeinu l'dor anichnas beretz roiv mitzvos hatzrichas liYisrael. He's going to teach the Jewish people a lot of mitzvahs that they need. But he's not going to repeat anything that's relevant for the kahuna. Nothing for Kehanim are going to be repeated in this week's parsha. The question is, why not? Why don't they get a repetition just like the rest of us? So I saw a sefer, he says, because everyone else, at whoever's standing in front of Moshe Rabbeinu, their parents were already passed. They were the Dor HaMidbar, but they already died. This is the next generation. So this younger generation doesn't know anything. They need a whole new education. But the Shevet Levi, they never died, because they never sinned. So they know it already. So all those people that are standing in front of Moshe Rabbeinu, they say, Moshe Rabbeinu, we know already, you told it to us. But everyone else from the other Shvatim, they weren't around. They don't even, some of these kids might not even know what the Chet Egel is, the Chet Meraglim. They were babies or not even born yet. But Shevet Levi, they were all around. So Shevet Levi, they didn't need a Chazara, they lived through it. So therefore, Shevet Levi did not get any mention. Says the Ramban, but Yisrael, Yachzor HaMitzvos HaNeges, we got to give it over again. Pam Lahoysev BeHembir, sometimes to add a little bit to it. And other times he says, just Lahazir Es Yisrael Brave Hazar. Just to bring home the point. And then he writes, the term Sheyaschel B'Bir HaTor. Now Moshe Rabbeinu had two jobs in this week's parsha, in this sefer. One job is teach Torah, one job is to give Musar. Which one's he going to do first? So we'd say, well, that probably depends on his background. A real Lutzvah Shiir would first get up and say Shiir, and at the end of the Shiir, he'd give Musar. Or maybe not. If he's more of a Musar person, first he'll give the Musar, then he'll say the Shiir. Says the Ramban, you know what Moshe Rabbeinu decided to do? He decided he's going to give Musar first. And he said, I want you to remember, and the words of the Ramban are so important. I urge everyone to look it up on your own. He writes, he tells them, before he teaches them Torah, he has to tell them, I have to remind you of your shortcomings. Kama yamruhu b'midbar. How many times you rebelled in the Midbar? Says the Ramban, you know what I'm teaching you? You acted incorrectly, but Hashem always had compassion for you. Hashem always was knowing Midas Rachamim. And you have to know that. You have to know, says the Ramban, that Hashem was always good to you. You did a lot of things wrong, but Hashem was always good to you. V'oid. Says the Ramban, you know why I'm giving you Musar? Hey, I want you to realize you did things wrong, and even though you did things wrong, Hashem loved you. Secondly, why am I giving you Musar? So you don't do it again. I don't want you to do it again. Then he says again, I want you to realize Hashem always has Rachmanis. A person should never say, how can we go into Eretz Yisrael? We don't stand a chance. If we lived in spiritual world in the Midbar and we kept on messing up, you don't think it's going to happen in Eretz Yisrael proper? He says, "Ki ain adam ashel ayechta umiyat yamidas adin metucha kenegdoi." Says the Ramban, "Bnei Yisrael said to Moshe Rabbeinu, we don't stand a chance. We're going to march into Israel. The first day we do something wrong, boom, we're gone." Says ulechein hoydiyo Moshe Rabbeinu. Says the Ramban, Moshe Rabbeinu is teaching them, "Ki Hashem Baruch Hu racham on molei rachamim. Hashem is merciful, full of mercy. Ki aslicha v'amechilu memcha yisbarach siyua v'ozar lebnei adam b'avodas Hashem helps you get where you need to go. Don't give up." Yes, you will sin, but don't forget that Hashem has this unbelievable level of rachamim that He has for you. So right away, what's remarkable about this Ramban is very important in the time that we are. As we'll go through the parasha, we're going to see there are so many messages, not only for Sefer Devarim, but for the time in the year we are right now, holding right before Tisha B'Av, there's so many messages and lessons that are relevant to the Chorban that we're in right now. The first message is that we can't forget that through all the issues, Hashem is always Malei Chesed. You know, many people that went through the Holocaust and they say, how do you believe in a God? They say, how can you not believe in a God? Those people who suffered and they can write books and they could tell you of all the times they saw Yad Hashem up and down where they saw Hashem was guiding them and helping them. How can you not see Yad Hashem? And that's what the Ramban is telling us. Yes, you did things wrong, but don't think Hashem forgot about you. Throughout life and when things are the darkest like we are right now in a Churban, we can't think for a second, oh, Hashem is not here, Hashem is no longer here. That's not true. Hashem is Molei Rachamim, even though we do sin. And that's why we're in Churban. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has not forsaken us, nor has He forgotten about us. Points are Ben Achlibutz and Ishurim, a very important lesson from this Ramban. The Ramban says we have to know that before we go into it, so we have to remember that Hashem will always forgive us. Why is that so essential? So he explains, because very often in life, there's despair. If we know that we sin one and we're out, so we just give up. There's no way we can survive. We're done. We're finished. Says the Ramban, there's no such option. There's no despair. Because no matter how bad you are, no matter how deep you get, you can always get out of it. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Malei Rachamim and He gives you Slicha. That's a very, very hopeful message for Klal Yisrael. That there's always a way out, no matter how depressing it looks. Because the worst meat in Klal Yisrael is hopelessness. When you give up hope, you're done. Game's over. Speak to anyone in the world. What we survive on is our hope. When we lose hope, there's nothing left to cling to. So Moshe Rabbeinu says the Ramban is reminding them, don't think it's all over. You sin once, you're done. No! You can sin, and you can rebel, and you can act improperly, but don't worry. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Molei Rachamim. In last week's parsha, we learn about the idea of the Ir Miklot, that we have these cities where people run away, sanctuary cities, right? You can run away, and you'll be protected, and you stay there. But the Torah says these cities are only effective once we move into Eretz Yisrael. So the Mefarshim ask, why couldn't they be effective already from Gad and Bnei Reuven? I understand for the rest of the Jews, they didn't move into Eretz Yisrael yet. But Gad and Reuven moved into Eivar Yarden right away. Why shouldn't they have an Ir Miklot? So one of the pshatim that they give is because one of the rules of an Ir Miklot is you stay till the Kohen Gadol dies. So anyone who's an Ir Miklot, his anticipation is the Kohen Gadol dies. Who was the Kohen Gadol at this time? Aaron's son. Aaron's son was not going to die. He was promised by Hashem he was going to move into Eretz Yisrael. So the Mefarshim say, how can you put someone in an Ir Miklot and he has nothing to hope for? What's he going to hope for? The Kohen Gadol is going to die? He's not going to die. It's impossible. Hashem promised Eliezer is going to live. When you can't, says the Mefarshim, you can't put a Jew in a situation where there is no hope. Hashem won't do it to you. So that's why Hashem didn't give us the Ir Miklot in Gad ibn Reuven, because it was a hopelessness situation. You're going to hope for something which will never come. I think it's such an important lesson in the Churban. People say, what are you waiting for? What are you hoping for? What do you mean? We know there's going to be a day. It's far. For us, it seems very far away, and we hope it's not. But there's hope. Whenever there's an option of a hope, we have what to cling for. When we are hopeless, then it's all over. And that's what the Ramban is teaching us. Don't feel that it's hopeless. Don't say, oh, forget it. I sin once, I'm out. I'm moving to Eretz Yisrael, I'm done. No. Ki HaKadosh Baruch Hu Molei Rachem. I think it's such an important lesson for our lives to remember. Through the darkest of times, we have to remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Molei Rachem, even when we don't deserve it. Kama Yamru B'Midbar. We rebelled. We acted inappropriately. And still HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Molei Rachem. That's really, I think, a very big nechama as we navigate through difficult times, whether it be personal or communal, like we are right now. It's very helpful to remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Molei Rachem. What is the uniqueness of Mishneh Torah? So we know the Mishneh Torah, this Sefer Devarim, is unique. The Gemara says that even though there's a machlokes in the Gemara, if you darish smuchos, if you have two parashas in the Torah written next to each other, you have the right to darish in it. So the Gemara says that's a machlokes. But in Sefer Devarim, kuli alma moide that we are darish smuchos. Why? Because something is different about Sefer Devarim. What is different about Sefer Devarim? So there's different versions of how exactly to say this. The Arachayim HaKadosh writes that in the opening pasuk it says, Eile HaDevarim. These are the words. So he writes that the word Eile, Eile is a miut. It's excluding something. What's the exclusion, says the Orach Chaim? That these are the only words where Moshe spoke on his own, but everything else, Moshe was basically parroting what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. Says the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, that here it's a miut, that these are Moshe Rabbeinu's own words. That's what it means to be Sefer Devarim. It's Moshe Rabbeinu talking, as opposed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu talking. So everyone's up in arms. What does that mean? Moshe Rabbeinu felt that he could just say whatever he wants. He can just give his own shittas and hashkafas. Are we supposed to believe that? So the Munkachi Rebbe has a whole discussion what that means. So the Munkachi Rebbe says, no, don't take the Arachayim HaKadosh literally. He doesn't mean that this is Moshe's words. Hashem told this to Moshe at some point. Now Moshe's just giving it over at this point in time, but it's really Divrei Elokim. There are many different pshatim. Others say not like that. Rav Moshe Shtenberg writes in his Sefer Tam Vadas, that's not the pshat. This is Moshe Rabbeinu's own ideas, meaning. The other four was Hashem telling Moshe, do this, do this. This is Moshe getting the vuah from Hashem with his way of expressing it, so to say. So it's something unique about this type of a parsha where Moshe Rabbeinu is giving us over his own understanding, perhaps, of Divrei Elokim. But the Arachayim HaKadosh goes on to teach us some very, very important ideas over here. The first ha'ara of the Arachayim HaKadosh is, he says, Eile is a miyat. What's the miyat? He says, this is the only time throughout 40 years in the desert where Moshe Rabbeinu rebuked everyone together. He says, Eile hadvarim, this is the only time Moshe Rabbeinu rebuked everyone. All the other times in the Torah, he rebuked a small group. This is the first time he rebukes everyone. It's a pretty big deal to rebuke an entire community. We're talking about 600,000 men between the age of 20 and 60. So you have to figure there's got somewhere around 2 million people. Moshe Rabbeinu rebuked everyone for the first time. All the other times were small groups. This is the first time, says the Arachayim HaKadosh, where he rebukes everyone. And he also says the word Eile is Gematria 36. Moshe Rabbeinu rebuked the Jewish people for 36 days. When does the 36 days start? On the second day of Shvat, till his dying day on Zayin Adar. Moshe Rabbeinu spent, can you imagine, Moshe Rabbeinu spent the last 36 days on this world, rebuking the Jewish people. That's a long Musashmus. 36 days. He spent rebuking the Jewish people, and that's alluded to the words Eila. Eila's 36, says Aruch Haim HaKadosh. He spent his last 36 days rebuking the Jewish people for 36 days. And then he says another unbelievable idea from Aruch Haim HaKadosh. He says, the Gemara says in Yuma, that you're not supposed to speak Sichas Chul. Okay? Halavai, we don't speak Lashon Hara, forget Sichas Chulim. But the Gemara says that you're not supposed to speak Sichas Chulim because it says, V'dibar Tabam, you're supposed to speak in Torah. V'loi B'dvarim B'Telem. We shouldn't spend our days speaking about idol chat. We're supposed to be speaking about Torah. So says the Aruch Haim HaKadosh, that's over here. Eila HaDvarim is a miyut, that this is the first time Moshe Rabbeinu spoke. Because everything else, he writes this, V'adiyah HaKosov, Ki Moshe Rabbeinu Olav HaSholem, Eila Hem HaMedab Meshe Dibu Koyomov Me'atzmoy, Levar HaDvar Meshe Tzivah HaBeshem L'dabrim. This is the first time Moshe spoke on his own. Moshe never spoke. Moshe never spoke. The first time he spoke was now. Halamata Shekayim V'dibar Tebom. This is the first time Moshe Rabbeinu opened up his mouth, besides all the times that Hashem asked him to speak. She said, unbelievable. Moshe Rabbeinu never spoke idle chat. He never spoke about, you know, what's going on. You think all the time he was dealing with people that were difficult and complicated. You think he never said to Aaron, I couldn't, like, these guys are all nuts, you know? You never thought he would turn to Aaron at the end of a long day and say, Aaron, what are we doing here? We should have became doctors. You know, rabbinics is not necessarily the easiest lifestyle. Nothing. Moshe Rabbeinu never spoke a word. It's an unbelievable idea. How to just understand those words that Moshe Rabbeinu never, ever spoke any Dvarim B'Telem. He only spoke Eila HaDvarim. This is the first time he spoke veering off from direct Tziva from HaKadosh Baruch. The Medrash tells us that the word Eila is Gematria Eicha. The exact same Gematria of the word Eicha. And the Medrash says if a person's Oivet, the Lamed Gimel creases, then he's eventually going to have to say Eicha. When a person acts incorrectly and he doesn't live through the Torah's message, he's going to have to come to a point where he says Eicha. How did I get here? The answer is, how did you get here? Because you didn't keep the Torah. And then he says the word Badad. Eicha Yoshvo Badad. That's Gematria 10. That's Gematria Y for the Seres Adibris. You want to know why you got where you are? Because you didn't keep the Torah. If you would have kept the Torah, you would have been in a much better place. We ask ourselves, how did I get here? The answer is, I got here because I was Mevatel, the Divrei HaTorah. The Medrash tells us that the Bnei Yisrael came to Kadosh Baruch and said, Kadosh Baruch, what are we supposed to do? When we had a Beis HaMikdash, so we knew how to get appeasement from you. We knew how to get atonement. We brought a carbon and all was forgiven. What do we do now? So the Medrash said, Kadosh Baruch answered them, Dvarim, words. Words are the replacement of the carbon. And they quote the Pasuk, says the Medrash, Kichu lachem bimachem dvarim, v'shuvu al Hashem. Says the Medrash, what words? What are you supposed to say? Says the Medrash, Ein dvarim ela Torah. Learning Torah. Says the Medrash in this week's parasha that a kapara for Averis, like the karbonos, is limanat Torah. Says the Medrash, that's Eila HaDvarim. These words, the words of Torah, are going to be what's going to be our Mechaper. Again, very appropriate time when we're holding now where we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. And one of the things we're lacking is, and we ask ourselves, how can I get Slicha V'Kapara today? Says the Medrash, through Liman HaTorah. When a person learns Torah, it gives them the ability to obtain Slicha V'Kapara, similar to what we had at the time of a Beis HaMikdash. The Medrash asks perhaps a very interesting question. We would have never asked it on our own. And the Medrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu gave a drasha for 36 days. Frek the Medrash, in the beginning of Sefer Shemais, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to Moshe Rabbeinu and says, I want you to free the Jewish people. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, Lo yish dvarim anoichi. I'm not a speaker. Frek the Medrash, you're not a speaker. You went off for 36 days. If I'm not mistaken, I think in Fiddler on the Roof, they have the same ha'ara. I think, what's the guy's name from Fiddler on the Roof, has this ha'ara. That Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to be not such a speaker. Moshe Rabbeinu was a big speaker. He was mechavin to the Medrash. It's Ramesh Medrash in this parasha. He says, I don't understand, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're not a speaker. You went on for 36 days. You're obviously a speaker. So the Medrash answers, you're right, Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't a speaker. But the more he was Isaac B'Torah, Kadosh Baruch Hu healed his speech impediment, and now he became a speaker. That's what the Medrash answers. So the obvious kasha in the Medrash is, it's not the first time Moshe Rabbeinu taught Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu has been teaching Torah for 40 years. So when did the speech impediment clear up? At the beginning or at the end? So the Sholom Meshiv writes that Moshe Rabbeinu, he quotes a Ran. The Ran says, why did Moshe Rabbeinu have a speech impediment? Why did Kadosh Baruch Hu do that to him? So he says, because we don't want people thinking that the people accepted the Torah because Moshe Rabbeinu knew how to spin it the right way. Right? You listen to a good public speaker, he can sell you a bridge. Some of these guys are so talented, they speak so well, everything they say just makes so much sense, and you're so convinced, and you buy whatever they're selling. So Hashem didn't want that to be Torah, that we just bought, Klaus were born in Torah, because Moshe Rabbeinu said it so beautifully, so eloquently, he spoke so well, so clear, oh, that's why I win. No, Moshe Rabbeinu was a lousy speaker, and nonetheless, he still was able to give over the message, because the Torah sold itself. Says the Sholom Eshev, that's only in the beginning. Now Moshe Rabbeinu sold them on the Torah. Now Moshe Rabbeinu is giving over lessons for life. When you give over lessons for life, you got to be clear. If you're not clear on the lessons that you're giving over, they're going to be lost. So now Moshe Rabbeinu had to get his mouth fixed. Nisrapeh, because now Moshe Rabbeinu had to be able to give over to Klai Yisrael a clear message, guidance. When he was giving over the Torah sells itself. He doesn't have to be a public speaker, but now he's got to be a public speaker because now he's speaking to give over lessons for life. There's another word they say over. The word Ele is a Nutriket. It stands for Aleph is Avak Lashon Hara. Aleph is Avak, Lamed He is Lashon Hara. Avak Lashon Hara. Because that's the famous Gemara in Baba Basra. The Gemara in Baba Basra says, Ruba Megezel, most of Klai Yisrael does Gzela. Miat Ba'arayis, a minority does illicit relationships, but V'kulam Ba'avak Lashon Hara, all guilty of Lashon Hara. And again, I think there's also a reference to the time we're holding right now, because the Gemara says that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sin HaSchinim. Says the Chafetz Chaim, it doesn't mean that we kicked each other, it doesn't mean we were mean to each other, it means we spoke Lashon Hara. That's part of the sin, says the Chafetz Chaim, of this Aveira, is Lashon Hara. And therefore the opening is Eile HaDevarim, is where we're referencing the Lashon Hara. And he says, the Sefer Gol Amukah says, that's why it continues and says, El Kol Yisrael. This is a problem for all the Jews. Avak Lashon Hara, Eile, we're all guilty of that. This is not one gender, one group, one demographics, no. Kulam Ba'avak Lashon Hara. We are all guilty of Avak Lashon Hara, and this we all know is so true. We are all guilty one way or another of Lashon Hara. It's probably the most difficult Aveira to overcome. I've heard from Rabbi Leibowitz said this over quite a few times. He says that he was once in Lakewood with his Talmidim from DRS. They went to Rabbi Tzio Solomon. And Rabbi Tzio Solomon asked the famous question. The Medrash tells us that every nation before they got the Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu kind of gave them the hardest mitzvah in there. And he said, the nations asked the Jewish people, Maksivve! What does it say? So each nation who was dealing with that Nisoyan was what Hashem said. So those people who like to kill, they told them, you're not allowed to kill. And those people who like to have illicit relations, they said, you now have illicit relations. So he asked, what would they have sold to the Jewish people that would have got them scared off from the Torah? So Hashem says a different shot, but the Matzio Solomon suggested it's Lashon Hara. If we would hear Lashon Hara, forget it, we're out. We can't get the Torah. Lashon Hara is just too much fun. It's so juicy, it's so exciting. We live off Lashon Hara. There are people who get up every morning just to speak Lashon Hara. That's why they get up in the morning. They go on the blogs and that's it. They're good to go for hours and hours. The whole essence is Lashon Hara. So if Klai Yisrael would have known before and we can't speak Lashon Hara, we would have never signed up for the Torah. So it says Rabbi Leibowitz, B'Shem, Rabbi Tzio Solomon. But it's true. Lashon Hara is a very, very difficult thing to tackle. One of the ways to tackle it, I think, is to learn the Sefer from the Chafetz Chaim and Shmir Salashin. The more you learn it, the more you see it's manageable. You could do it. But it's a very, very difficult in the science of Lashon Hara. But the Chafetz Chaim reminds us, that's why we're trying to be mechaper this time of the year. The Kli Yakar points out in his Sefer, there's some unbelievable Kli Yakars in this week's Parsha. If we don't get to all of them, I urge you, at least in the first 12, 15 psukim, try to look at every Kli Yakar. They're fantastic, they're amazing, they're unbelievable. We'll try to get to as many as we can. So the first Kli Yakar, he says right away, he says, one second. Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to 600,000 men between the ages of 20 and 60. Where? How? There's no microphone loud enough to be able to project such a sound. How did Moshe Rabbeinu speak to so many people? So the Kli Yakar comes up with the following idea. He did not speak to all of Klal Yisrael. Who did he speak to, says the Kli Yakar? And this is a very nice diak. Kli Yakar said, look at the Lashon of the Pasuk. Eila advar mashadibi Moshe el kol Yisrael. How do we normally associate the term for the Jewish people? B'nei Yisrael. Who's Kol Yisrael? It should have said, El Kol B'nei Yisrael. Says the Kli Yakar because he didn't talk to Kol Yisrael. He spoke to Yisrael. Who's Yisrael? The Gedolim, the leaders. So therefore, says the Kli Yakar, he didn't speak to 600,000 people because that's impossible. He spoke to perhaps a small group of people, the leaders of the generation. So explains the Kli Yakar. But why did he speak to the leaders? Because the leaders are the ones that are going to be rebuking the next generation. And Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to the leaders and he was guiding them and educating them on the art of rebuking, how to give proper musa. Because like everything in life, it starts from the top. Leadership has a job and a responsibility to pass down to the next generation. So Moshe Rabbeinu was giving over the power to the gedolim, to the leaders, to give over to the next generation. And Nissen Alpert comments in last week's parasha, Parshas Matos, beginning of the parasha, when the mitzvah of Nedarim was given, who was it given to? Rosh HaMatos, the leaders of the Nesiim. So he points out, because Nedarim is all about words. So he says the leaders have to learn how to guide and educate through words. Leadership is a very big responsibility. You have to be able to ensure that you're not leading through fists or through pain and through hitting, but you're guiding through words. And he says that that's why it was given to the Rosh Hamatos. The Rosh Hamatos, leaders have to realize how to give over. And this is an issue we have in our generation where sometimes the leaders talk to the people and they're not understanding the needs of the people. You have to understand who you're talking to and what they need to know. People discuss in banning internets, you lost the crowd. That's not an option for today's world, to tell people, well, just throw out your phones and throw out your computers. It's not going to work. You have to come up with a better solution. Talk their terms. You don't have to drop down to their level, but you have to understand where they're coming from. And that's, I think, what the Kliyakar is telling us over here, where Moshe Rabbeinu spoke specifically to the idea of the Gedolim, because they're the ones who are going to relay the message to the next generation. Rashi comments in the first Rashi. Rashi says, what is this all about? So Rashi, this is one long Musar Shmuz. Now, if it's one long Musar Shmuz, the Musar is missing from the entire speech. All Moshe Rabbeinu gives is locations, right? Tells us about a bunch of places. Says Rashi, famous Rashi. Rashi says each place is referencing a mistake that we made, but there was no need to give open rebuke. Rashi says it was Mirames. Why? Bnei Kvoidon Shel Yisrael. Out of respect for Klal Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe Rabbeinu felt that it was more correct, instead of giving them an outward open rebuke, he'll just make the reference. The reference will be good enough, everyone will know what we're talking about. The Kliyakar writes, you see from this whole parsha, that if you want to be a successful Moichiach, if you want to give over Musar in a way that's going to be received, don't yell and scream at people. Yelling and screaming will not always give you the return that you're hoping for. He writes, if you want people to hear what you're saying, don't yell and scream, and don't make them feel horrible. But be meramis to him. Remind him. He said, you remember what happened last week? You got it. Now, it's interesting. I don't mean to, Chas v'Shalom, disagree with the Kliyakar, but in Shalom Bayis today, we don't give that advice to the young couples. When we talk about advice for couples that are trying to fix problems, we tell them, don't give this vague stuff. Because we're not quick enough to understand these things. We're not as smart as Bnei Yisrael. If you have a problem with your spouse, be very clear and tell them X and Y. Last week, at the pizza store, you said this and this. Don't say like, do you remember what happened last week? And hope your spouse will understand. But the Kliyakar says that in the world of Musa, we're supposed to be able to pick that up. But perhaps what the Kliyakar means is something different. He says, instead of yelling and screaming, give them the tools that they can realize this on their own. Meaning, point out the flaws without saying you're a horrible person, and you're a dirty person, and you're a bad person, but say, you know what? Hashem expects X and Y of us, and we're not living up to our expectations. What's more of a logical mussar? I heard once in the Mashgiach in my yeshiva, someone once asked him, why don't you give mussar with more of like a yelling and screaming? So he said, because Zelig Epstein told him that the more correct way to give mussar is not a way of yelling and screaming, but more of an educational way. Point out to the people where their flaws are, point out the flaws that they're making, and let them say to themselves, oh wow, he's talking about me. Instead of pointing and saying, you're bad and you're bad, talk to a general crowd, and everyone says to themselves, oh wow, I didn't realize he's talking about me. And the other guy says to himself, oh wow, he's talking about me. So instead of pointing fingers, that's probably what the Kliyakar means. It's not about pointing fingers, it's about coming to the realization on your own that you are making a mistake, and therefore you need to improve. Reb Leib Chasman points out that although Rashi says we're not supposed to give outward open rebuke, if you turn to the Haftarah in this week's Parsha, the Navi gives such sharf a mussar. He tells him you're worse than a donkey. At least an animal knows his master. You don't even know your master. What happened? What happened to giving subtle, calm, easy mussar? So Reb Leib Chasman points out, he says you have to know your crowd. The Dor HaDeah, they were very close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They got it. You give them, drop them a hint, enough said. But as time goes on, this is probably the answer to what I was saying about the couples. As time goes on, we're not so sharp anymore. And his word is, we don't have his bainanus. Used to people would think about something. You would remind them of a place, they connected one to two, and they realized, okay, I got it, enough said. We lost that. Today we have to be explained everything in Baruchel, Bitcha, Haktana terms. Today everything has to be taught. So therefore says Leib Chasman, that's the difference. The Dar HaDeah, they got it. Hashem said, Moshe said a place, they got good and well what Moshe Rabbeinu wanted, enough said. But today we need to be spoon-fed everything. So therefore, they needed to be spoon-fed. They needed to be told specifically, clearly, what the mistake was. And Moshe Feinstein points out in his Sefer, another reason why it's not worth mentioning all the mistakes is because it's a Chil Hashem. We're going to relive that whole debacle. Why go through it again? We got it. It's enough. Lahavda alpha of dollars in the world today with all these mass shootings, a lot of the media won't even say their names. They won't even mention their name because we don't want to give them the credence. We won't give them the credence. Why? Because there's going to be a copycat, the whole thing. So similar, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, we don't want to say what our flaw is. We don't want to relive that. We don't want to open that up to society for someone saying, wow, my Alter Zayda did that. Okay, so you know what? It's okay if I do it also. It's a Chilul Hashem. To relive that whole episode and that whole story is not worth it. So just keep it simple. Let's keep it at the story. You know what it was, and we can move on. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz points out in his Sichas Musar that we learn from this Rashi a very important lesson about life. Rashi says that Al's covered for Bnei Yisrael. Covered for Bnei Yisrael. They deserve it. They did the crime. They did it. They're not denying that they didn't sin at the Chet Egel and the Meraglim and each step along the way. So why shouldn't we give them, what do we covered of Klai Yisrael? Why, we have a term, you do the crime, you pay the time, that's it. So why should we care about their glory? Says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz in the Sichas Musar, the Torah is teaching us the value of every human being. We have no right and we have no permission to embarrass or insult another human being, even if that human being perhaps deserves it. He says, another place we find this in Chazal is by Bilam. Bilam's donkey had to be killed after the whole story of Bilam. Why? Because it would be embarrassing for the donkey to live. In fact, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, it's embarrassing. It would have been the greatest Kiddush Hashem. That this donkey will forever and ever talk about how Hashem runs the world and Bilam is not successful would be the most beautiful thing in the world. Says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, but it would be an insult to Bilam. Bilam! Bilam is a Rasha. The Gemara talks about where Bilam is going to be in the afterlife. He's going to be burning and this and that and the other. Bilam? Says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, yeah, even a Bilam. Even a Bilam, even the Bnei Yisrael. And then they quote one more Gemara. Another Gemara relevant to this time of the year with the very famous story of Kamsa Ubar Kamsa. The Gemara tells us because of the story of Kamsa Ubar Kamsa Chover Yerushalayim, because one Jew was insulted. Now he was insulted. And you know what he did? He went and tattled on us and got us in massive trouble. But he didn't deserve to be embarrassed. Says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, we learn from this week's parasha the value of every single Jew. Every Jew counts. Every Jew's honor should be respected and he deserves. Why? Because he's a Tzelem Elikim, he's a person. We don't have the proper respect always for what it means to be a human being. I would add, he doesn't say this, but everyone is bound potential. We see people to us, they look like nobodies, they look like losers. We have no idea what's going on. Could be Klapei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they're way more chashuv than all of us. To us, they look like a loser. That's our perception. But could be these people are walking tzaddikim, they have bigger nesiyonos than us, they overcame much more than us. Never lose sight on the value of every human being, and therefore, says Rashi, they were treated, they have covered Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu had to be careful on the musa that he gave. But the kasha that should bother all of us is if one reads through the parsha, Moshe Rabbeinu, when it comes to the Meraglim, he does not hold back a word. He blasts them. What happened to being so calm and being so easy? So the Mefarshim answer, because the Chet HaMeraglim was a breach in Amunah. That's something that we still are working on. Chet HaEgel was Avodah Zarah, we're pretty much past that. But Chet Amunah, we grapple with every single day of our life. We have not yet perfected Amunah. We're still working on it. We all have moments where we doubt HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why does this happen to me? Why am I not getting this? We all deal with Amunah. And the Farshim say, they quote from the Beis Halevi in Parshas Boy, the Beis Halevi says the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Chet HaEgel. Chet HaEgel is Avodah Zarah. Fine. And it was rebuilt 70 years later because we were able to obtain Slicha for it. What was the second Beis HaMikdash? He says the Chesaron during Bayu Sheni, besides for Siddur Chinam, was that we didn't believe in Teresh HaBal Peh. The Tzedukim. Why don't you believe in Teresh HaBal Peh? Because you don't believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a breach in Amunah. He says, that's not revealed yet, because we still grapple with that. We still deal with Amunah as an ongoing issue. We still all have Amunah questions. Most of us don't doubt HaKadosh Baruch Hu exists, but we doubt in the darkest of times, we don't know where he is, and we doubt him. We're all guilty of that. And therefore, the idea of Amunah was the Chet HaMeraglim, and that's why Moshe Rabbeinu had to openly rebuke them, because that is something we are still living with until this day. The Kli Yakar himself goes on to really answer our kasha. He says that he only spoke to the Gedolim, he spoke hard. To the Gedolim, he spoke easy. But to Bnei Yisrael, he went hard on them. He says, that's why by the Meraglim, that's already was open to the public. Open to the public, everyone gets open rebuke. If you say it like this, that would also answer the kasha from the Navi. By the Navi was giving rebuke to everyone. When you give rebuke to everyone, then it's hard. When you give it to the Gedolim, it's more tamer. But when you're giving it to everyone, then it's going to be very hard. So what happens in the first Pasuk? The first Pasuk, it says that Moshe Rabbeinu is going through all the places, and one of the places he counts is Ben Paron u Ben Teufel. What's Paron and what's Teufel? So Rashi learns that Paron is referring to the Mon, and Paron is referring to the Meraglim, and Teufel is referring to the Mon. The Kli Yakar has a different pshat. The Kli Yakar says that what's going on over here is that Paron is the Meraglim, And Teufel is referring to the Chet Egel. And then he says something unbelievable. Says the Kli Yakar, that is the two points of time where we're holding right now. The Meraglim on one end, and Chet Egel on the other end. What was the Meraglim? That was Tisha B'Av. They came back and they cried. Chet Egel, that was Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah, Yizayim B'Tammuz, Nishtabru. That all happened on Yizayim B'Tammuz. He says, we're holding right now, Bein Parnu, Bein Teufel. That's what we're holding right now. The 3 weeks is the time between those two periods. And then he goes on to say something which I never thought of. He says that the Meraglim created a feeling of Sinas Chinam. When the Meraglim came back, they created such an animosity to each other. Why? Because 10 people said one thing, 2 people said something else. Can you imagine the fights that broke out? And once there's a breakdown in Avas Yisrael, there's a breakdown between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he says, Ba'ish Rishon had the same problem. Ba'ish Rishon, the Sinas Chinam wasn't Jew to Jew, it was Jew to leadership. There was such a breakdown in leadership. The Gedolim were all fighting. And then in Bayesheni, we were all fighting. And he says, Chodesh Av is the mazel of the Aryeh, the lion. The lion attacks. We, in this month, are attacking. We attack each other. We attack leadership. We attack everything. And he says, that's what the Pasuk says, Achar HaSayoyim. The 11 days of travel is referring to the 11 days that we mourn the Beis HaMikdash. 9 days of the 9 days, Shiva Asa B'Tamuz and Asar B'Tavis. We're holding right now Bein Parun or Bein Teufel, between those two mistakes of Meraglim, mistake of Chet Egel, and we have to figure out a way to be mechaper on these types of things. And then the pasuk goes on, Moshe Rabbeinu reminds them of the appointing of the judges. He says, I appointed judges, but there's a pasuk over here that I want to mention. The pasuk says that Klai Yisrael is compared to the Kechavim. So Rabbi Asher Weiss has, again, a gewaltige insight into Jewish life. Klai Yisrael is often compared to Kechavim, and sometimes Klai Yisrael is compared to the sand. So he points out that they're so opposite. A star is special. That's why someone's called a star, right? When someone's amazing, we call him a star. What's a star? It twinkles, it glows, it's high up, it's glorious, it's glamorous. What's dust and sand? There's nothing fancy about that. You step on it. So what is the understanding? So he points out that sand on its own is nothing. But when sand comes together, it becomes a shoreline. It prevents the water from coming up. So sand on its own is not valued, but with others it's valued. So that's what he says. And I'd like to add, perhaps, maybe that's the two ideas. A star is always by itself. There's no greatness of a bunch of stars. One star. We all individuals are stars. And we shine, and we have great character traits, and that makes us special as an individual level. And then we come together as being part of the sand. That's our achdus as Klal Yisrael. And again, being one piece of sand is useless. When you're part of the rest of the beach, now you're a beach. And that's what the Torah is reminding us. We have our own talents as individuals, but we also have our greatest talents as being part of Klal Yisrael. Again, something that we need to perhaps work on this time of the year when we're trying to appreciate Klal Yisrael. And then the pasuk says, the Moshe Rabbeinu told them, Hashem Elokeichem, I'll go back 1 second just to mention it. The pasuk says, "V'omar aleichem beisahi la'uchal v'adi says eschem." Moshe Rabbeinu said, "I'm not able to carry you. I couldn't judge all of you guys. You're too much. I had to get guidance. I had to get assistance, and that's why I appointed assistance." And Hashem, just there were so many of you. Hashem alekechem here beeschem v'nechachem kachachem l'roiv. There's just so many of you. Then he writes, Hashem alekechem avesechem yosef alechem, and Hashem should add. There should be 1,000 more. You should continue to multiply. So Rashi tells us that Klal Yisrael is very upset at Moshe Rabbeinu. You're shortchanging us. Only 1,000? We want to have so many more kids. We want to be endless amounts. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, yeah, you're right. That's my brach. Hashem will give you even a bigger brach. What's this whole dialogue? What's this conversation? The Chassam Sofer has a very interesting idea over there. The Chassam Sofer says, Moshe Rabbeinu was testing the Jewish people. He was asking them, why do you want children? Do you want children because they're a tax deduction? Do you want children because they'll do things for you in the house? Why do you want children? Do you want children just to help you in the field? So Moshe Rabbeinu said to him, if all you want children is just to be work the field, so I'll give you 1,000-fold, that's plenty. And if that's all you want, then you'd be happy. But when Moshe Rabbeinu gets to respond back from B'nai Yisrael, no, we want more. Why? You don't need 1,000 people working in your house. The answer is, that's not why we want to have children. We want to have children because we want to be able to educate them and teach them to be able to be Mekadeshim Shemayim. Oh, says the Chassam Sofer, oh, you passed the test. That's what I wanted to hear. Why do you want to have children? Not just so they can help you, and not just so you can blame things on them, and not just so they can run out for you in the car. My daughter's old enough now to when I pull up to a store, so I can double park and she runs in and she takes my credit card. She knows how to use it way too well. She knows exactly how to put the chip in, how to sign her name. It's terrific.
How old is she?
She's only 11, almost 11. It's great. I always tell her, I said, I just have one more thing. You did all this. Can you also pay the bill when it comes? You got this far. Let's see if you can do the end of it. Right? That's not why we have children, so they can do things like that for us. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, that was what I was testing them. Do you want to have children so they can be Kadishim Shemayim? And the Pirkei Deblaza tells us that when Esav saw Yaakov's whole mishpacha, he said to them, who are all these people? What was he asking them? He said, I don't understand. You're Yaakov, you're an Olam Haba guy. You don't live for this world, so why are you having so many kids? And his response was, because children are not put into this world as a means to help us. They're here to be Mekadeshim Shemayim. They were spiritual experience children. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu was promising them that, yeah, now that I see why you have the right intention, now Kosh Baruch Hu should give you an abundance of children. It's an important lesson in life. Very often parents look at children as a chetimsa to produce nachas for them. Like they're here just to give you nachas. That's not why children are put onto this planet, just to give you nachas. Yeah, we all as parents would love to have nachas from our children. But they're here to be mekadeshim shemayim. We're here to educate them and to teach them so they can make brachas and they can talk about Kadosh Baruch Hu and they can learn Torah. That's why they're here. And it's an unbelievable responsibility that we have as a parent to make sure they're doing that. Because if they're here not for that, then we're falling into the trap of having the wrong idea of why Kadosh Baruch Hu blessed us with children. Yeah, so much more to talk about. Let's just talk about the Meraglim. Rashi comments that the mistake by the Meraglim was that when they came to speak to Moshe Rabbeinu, they came Behola. Rashi says, Barvuvya. When you came to me to ask me to send Meraglim, you came Barvuvya. As opposed to when Klal Yisrael came to Mekabel the Torah. Rashi says, what did you do? By Kabbalah said Torah, you came properly. You allowed the elders to go first, and there was respect, and he held the door for people. This is Pasuk Chav Beis. But says Rashi, when it came to the Meraglim, Kulchem Barvuvia, you all came in a Havlu. You allowed them Deichmas as Kedim. Can you imagine, just picture this? The children pushing the elderly. This Kedim Deichmas as Rashim, and the elderly pushing the Gedolim. Like a wild scene. So all the Mefarshim ask, that's your Taina on the Meraglim? How we came to ask? We had much bigger problems. We didn't believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ability to protect us. We didn't believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ability to conquer. And you're worried about our ability, how we came? So the Mefarshim will say, Rabbi Yochanan Lubavitch says it this way, Rabbi Yitzchak Volozhin, Rabbi Chaim Volozhin's son say it this way. You can tell a lot by the way you come to lay your claim. A lot can be defined and learned about a person, how he comes. When you come with thinking, you come calmly, you come rational, it means you thought about this. This is something that's important to you, something that you value, and you're pleading your case. When you just come running and screaming and wild, that means you're not really thinking about this well. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling them. If you really thought that the Meraglim was a good idea, you would have came with us with a logical, you would have printed up 25 pages of reasons, pros and cons, and you would have came respectfully. You didn't do that. You did that by Kabbalah Satayra, because that was something that was correct. But something like this, you didn't really care enough about it. You didn't really think about it. And the Kli Yakar takes it a step further. Says the Kli Yakar, this is now a rebuke on Kabbalah Satayra. Till now we thought, oh, look how beautiful they were by Kabbalah Satayra. This is really a good nation. Says the Kli Yakar, no, you're not. It's because you didn't care enough about the Torah. Do you know why you let the elderly people go first? Because you're like, you know what, let him have it. And I'll sit in the back. I'll get the Torah later. It's not because you respected the elders, it's because you don't want what I was selling. Because the moment there was something else on the table, like Meraglim, then you guys elbowed each other to get to the front of the line. Says the Kli Yakar, this is Megalah L'Mafreya on Kabbalah Satayra. You didn't really care about the elders, and you didn't really care about the rush. You didn't care about any of that. It's because you didn't care about the Torah. And therefore, says the Kli Yakar, this is actually a rebuke, not only on the Chet Meraglim, but it's L'Mafreya rebuke on Kabbalah Satayra as well. Okay, leave it for here.